Welcome to the Teaching and Evaluating Non-Natives Academic Writing panel. This afternoon we have a program with sort of a dual focus. We want to present some specific problems that international students tend to face when they are writing, and approaches and resources for dealing with them on the part of faculty, staff, consultants. There's a long list of people, whoever has to deal with those. So I want to just briefly go over the components in the program and in the English Language Center's offerings regarding writing. I am the assistant director of the English Language Center. We really have four components in the program, and the first one is pre-English for academics and professionals, or pre-EAP. And our representative today addressing that aspect is Michael Jumonville, language teaching specialist at the ELC. Nancy Colonghe, also a language teaching specialist with us, is going to address two of the components, the EAP, the English for Academics and Professionals, and special programs. So, and finally, we've got two of our writing consultants with us this afternoon, Rob Watson and Brad Teague, and they will be addressing the writing workshop. Okay. In the pre-EAP component, we've got three levels that students typically test into, in terms of English proficiency level. The basic, in terms of writing, students are really working on the very fundamentals of even alphabet and word level, as well as sentence level once they begin progressing somewhat. The intermediate level, students are working on the paragraph and essay levels and in the advanced preparation for research and actually writing a research paper. Okay, in the EAP component, we have academic writing as the course that we offer for graduate students, and it deals with both general and discipline-specific aspects. And eventually, we hope also to be able to offer this course for undergraduates. In special programs, we currently have two, one for the Owen Graduate School of Management, Business English, and the other for the Law School, which is English Legal Writing. The writing workshop is relatively new in the ELC. It started in January of 08, so it's just a little more than a year old. This was developed in conjunction with the writing studio, and at this point we do mutual referrals. The writing studio tends to focus more on content in writing and work with undergraduate level students mostly, whereas we in the writing workshop tend to focus more on the language aspects, the grammar, the vocabulary structure, those sorts of aspects, and we work mostly with graduate level students. However, nothing's 100%, so there is some overlap, and obviously if an undergraduate comes to us, we will accept them and work with them as well, and vice versa. So the guidelines for the program for students to get sessions and so forth are on our website at ELC Writing Workshop, so you can check those out. I just briefly wanted to touch on a few of the common problems before we get into the specific components. Hi, come in. Some of the common problems that international writers have: cultural difference in both amount and types of writing experience. This can vary considerably from country to country. And when students come to the United States and are writing in an academic context, they're often very surprised at the differences from their own experience. In some cultures, some countries, there's very little experience with writing, whereas comparatively here, there's a great deal. So, first thing. Also, unfamiliarity with the meta language. They often simply don't understand what's expected of them in writing assignments. Student awareness of discipline-specific writing conventions, that is delineated in style manuals. And even advanced level students often still encounter problems with some of what might be considered elementary aspects of the language, using the right articles, prepositions, verb tenses, and so forth. Those types of problems persist well into advanced level writing. They may use the language very well, have an advanced vocabulary, particularly in that field, but still be having these little mechanical problems. Another problem is direct translation, which often leads to incomprehensible syntax, awkward phrasing, just weird vocabulary choices, these kinds of problems. Plagiarism, which appears often as too perfect writing. Teachers tend to become suspicious when all of a sudden things are said just perfectly, whereas the rest of the paper wasn't quite so perfect. Register, it's hard often for students to differentiate in a foreign language, which English is for them, between what's colloquial, what's everyday English, and what's considered academic language. So often a problem. And I will now turn the program over to Michael Jumenville, who will talk more about the pre-EAP component. Thank you.
Good afternoon. The Pre-English for Academics and Professionals is a program to prepare students to enter a university as an undergraduate. They usually spend approximately a year with us to get their English up to the right level, and they're ready to apply and enter an American university. Most of them are full-time students, and they can be sometimes embassy or scholarship sponsored, and they have a visa for the time they're in the United States. This program has many different types of courses and different levels, and we always test them when they first come in to find out exactly what level they are, to put them with other students of the same level. And for writing, we have an in-house prompt, which the students must write on a specific subject, and that sample will be the final basis for putting them into one of our three levels. The core program has all of the skills, including listening, speaking, writing, and reading, and we want them to have a really good foundation in English. But what kind of English is it? We really aim for an academic preparation, because the goal is not just to be conversationalist or traveler in English, but actually to be able to participate in a class, understand the assignments, do the homework, and succeed in academics and beyond as well. We have several components to our program. Lee talked a little bit about them before. I'll give you a few more details. We have the curriculum, which I've just explained. It's the core four levels of listening, reading, three levels of listening, reading, speaking, and writing. Then we have an academic orientation course, which helps them understand the process of applying to university, helps them to write the essay portion if they have to write a statement of purpose or letter of application, and also deals with the American academic culture and the U.S. culture specifically, because they will be studying here. There's also an academic content review course, which is mainly for engineering students, but it brings them some focus on chemistry, physics, math. And that is done by professors at Vanderbilt. It's not the English language teaching specialists who teach them this. This is to prepare them for the technical aspects of the classes they're going to have, which is beyond the linguistic areas. We have three levels. Lee spoke a little bit about it, but basically for our writing program, which is the subject for today, basic can be no English up to some English and making a lot of errors, not having a very big vocabulary. So we try to develop their vocabulary so that they can make coherent sentences which are grammatically correct, write them with a correct punctuation. Little by little, they will write compositions that are longer and longer, up to paragraph length. The main styles, rhetorical styles, would be description, narration, opinion. And once they've done a semester, which is about 12 weeks of this program, they're ready to move into intermediate level. There, they will start learning how to write a really good paragraph, not just paragraph length sentences, but with topic sentence and correct development. And they will move on to make essays. And we have different types of essays they use: classification, reaction, opinion, comparison and contrast. It gets more and more complex as they go along. Then the final semester, this would be, if someone started at the beginning, this would be a three-semester program, is the advanced level, where they perfect their essay skills and move on to doing a research paper, where they'll have to document sources, they'll have to learn how to paraphrase, summarize, and be able to do some research in the library or online in order to write research papers. For teachers who have not had much experience with internationals, a few things that you may run into when they arrive in your classrooms will be students needing help understanding what the assignment means. Something that could be clear for an American student will not actually be as clear as that for someone from another country. I've given just a couple of examples. Summarize consequences of a family's move from the northeast of the United States to the southeast. They won't necessarily know that. The teacher was trying to get the people to explain about Greek Orthodox people moving from New York down to some small town in Alabama, and what would be the reaction, how are Yankees received when they come to the South, and it's just too many references that they would not have. How would Americans of your parents' age have reacted to this situation? Well, their parents aren't American, so they would have a great deal of difficulty. They have to imagine that. Welcome. Some advice would be, really be sure to write in a very detailed assignment for them. Don't just tell them the assignment, but tell them what you want, how long it needs to be, exactly what type. You cannot make too many details. The more details, the better. And even writing out a complete assignment for them, how long it must be, would be very helpful for them. A few other issues. They may write in a very informal tone. They may write like a conversation tone instead of a written tone. They may use slang. They don't necessarily know that it is slang, but it's just expressions that they've heard, and they will put it in a paper. If you ask them maybe to do some research and give the latest data on a certain subject, they may give you their opinion on this subject, or if you're asking for an opinion, they may just report the latest findings. So there can be a confusion in the type of assignment and what it calls for. They have a lack of knowledge of TV shows, events, news in the United States, references, people, personalities, things like that that are very usual for an American student to know. Humor is extremely difficult for them because it's very often culturally based. So we just be aware of some of those issues. Other issues would be problems with their writing. As Lee said before, too perfect writing. They're maybe plagiarizing, because in some of their cultures it's allowed to just take a block of information and not say it came from someone else. It's actually very flattering for the person who wrote it just to pull it out and cut and paste it. They will try to put things in their own words, but that's a very difficult thing. They already, when they see the example, they think, wow, this is great, this is expressed so wonderfully, why should I change it and put it in my English, which is not nearly as good. Sometimes they try to paraphrase, but they may choose the wrong words or a literal translation which doesn't match. And another thing is the style manuals and the rules of how to cite your sources in text, at the end, how to punctuate, all of that. It's just a lot of rules for them to be able to follow, so they will have some difficulty in that and may need a little extra private help as well. specific language, could be grammar and vocabulary, using the wrong word, using the wrong tense. They're talking about something going on now and they're speaking in the past, or vice versa. That can be confusing. Using the wrong name for something, as I spoke of before. Phrasal verbs, which are two-part verbs, such as go on, get out, get over, get up, hang out, hang in there. Those are very hard for them to master. In fact, we talk about prepositions and articles. Lee mentioned that before, but prepositions and articles can be some of the most difficult things for an international to master. There's so many exceptions and difficulties. We're lucky to speak English as native language, I think. A little more advice is to take one-on-one time with them, be there to answer their questions. I talked to some of the students that I was teaching this morning about this, and one of them said, yes, if I can just ask as many questions as I need at the beginning, then I really understand the assignment, I can do a lot better job. So if teachers are patient enough to listen to my few questions after class maybe, so I won't interrupt class, then I really know what I'm doing and I can do a better assignment. Give them examples of students writing from other classes that you've taught, or the same similar type of example. If the students have given you permission to show their work, they will have a model. It's so important to have a model. You can refer them to the writing workshop, obviously, and writing studio for help with their writing. And also let them know that you understand that it's difficult, but stress the importance of framing interesting and relative content in the right sort of frame, which is the style of writing, is very important. And now I will pass the flame on to Nancy. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nancy. Glad to be here today. Nice to see you all. I have been working in special programs, the special programs component that we have since the beginning of my job at the ELC. We offer support and classes to several components. Some of them are active right now, as Lee said, two of them, the law school and the Owen School, Graduate School of Management. I put LAPOP on here. We have had a group of LAPOP. LAPOP is an acronym for Latin American Public Opinion Project. This is part of the political science department at Vanderbilt, and I have had students from that group who are involved in writing up the results of their surveys in Latin America, and I have really learned a lot from them. They may have not learned as much from me, but it was a very interesting experience to have worked with them. There's a difference between our classes and our support. At Owen, we have classes, and they are tailored to the kinds of writing that business students will do. In the summer program at the law school, law school is a three-pronged program. We have a summer institute, which I participate in, the language component, and we have a JD who teaches them the legal writing and legal reasoning in order to be able to write what they have to write. This is an actual class. What I am doing now during the fall and spring semesters is support. It is issues that I address, issues that they bring up that they want to talk about or need help with in their writing. The law school students have a different kind of writing. I have always posited that legal writing is not writing. It's legal writing. It's very different from other types of writing. But for the students, all of the students that we serve, one of the things that has helped me most to help them is to do a needs analysis, find out what they need and also what they want. Obviously, in business school, they will write memos, letters, proposals, executive summaries, business plans, things like that. So we try to tailor the EAP writing, the academic writing for them, because we have some of the graduate students in those classes. In the law school and the Owen Graduate School, we try to tailor our instruction to what they actually are going to be doing in the class. Right now, I am working with thesis track students at the law school, and we work together on their theses, which is a huge writing project. It used to be mandatory for everybody. Now, only the brave take that up. All right, so when we do the needs analysis, we interview the students, try to divide. We have questionnaires that we give them. We get a writing sample from them, and we try to contact faculty advisors to see what their expectations are, too, because that's very necessary. As my colleagues have said, clear assignments and clear notion of what they need to do is crucial for them to produce the documents that they need to do. When students come here, they are expected to do certain things at this level in the professional schools, but they also want to do some other things, and sometimes they are the same, sometimes they're different. Sometimes they want to know how to write better emails, sometimes they want to do personal statements, things like that. So we try to address what they want as well as what they need. All right. After we find out what they want and what they need, we try to see what their errors are, the most frequent ones, and prioritize them. They tend to make the same mistakes very frequently, even if they are corrected. And so we have to address the ones that are going to affect the quality of their writing the most. And so we see if students need reviews. They have all done these things before because these are students who have already gone through bachelor's programs and sometimes other master's programs as well. So we go through the things that we go through in the pre-EAP, which is verb tense and modal review. They often have difficulty with that. Sentence construction, transitions and connecting phrases. This is very important. This is part of the language that they need to use. There are some lexicals that are expected in certain types of writing, certain types of phrasing, certain chunks of words that go together. So we take a look at that. And then, of course, the issue of paraphrasing and summarizing. The difference between their own writing and what they put in some places without citing is stark. And it's not just too perfect writing, it's just night and day. It doesn't look like them, so we try to get them away from that. All right, and the reviews may reduce the need for grammar police. Grammar police, in my view, is correcting every single error that they make. But international students expect this. They, especially if their level of writing is at an intermediate level. There's a general assumption that if you know how to speak a language, you can write it. Not true. And through my experience with La Pop and the law students, I have found that many students have never had a writing course in any language. And also, sidebar, my experience with second language students in Puerto Rico showed me that sometimes when students learn to write in English, it's the first time they're learning to write at all, and they can write better in English than in their home language because they're not good writers in Spanish either. Interesting, interesting, informal finding, I must add. All right, so to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk, they have to have vocabulary. This is one of the major complaints that I find from international students is that they know what to say. These are not little kids, they are adults. And they've got ideas, they've got preparation, they have skills and experience, but they don't have the words that they want to say. And so they need a fund of vocabulary, and the academic word list is a very nice tool for this. You can go online, they've got the list, they've got the word families, they've got quizzes, they've got exercises, all kinds of things to work with this word list, which has been culled from the commonly used words in academic papers. They need to develop a fund of field-specific words and phrases. Their field-specific terminology is easy for them. They pick up on that easily, but they need to be able to put it together in chunks of language. Sometimes they don't know how to do that. When I taught academic writing last semester, my colleague and I divided the group into hard science and soft science because it was easier to work with one or two style manuals than it was for each of us in a mixed group to work with six style manuals. Very difficult, and they need to know where to go to put their papers together and cite and reference them properly. I've also used models. Models work very nicely. Do it this way. Show them not a simple model, but something that's easy to understand, and they will get it. And text analysis, I find, is very helpful because a real paper from a field that they are studying is very helpful for them to put together the language that they need to use, what is expected. And what happens here, I'm going to go down to my third point, when plagiarism is not plagiarism. It isn't in certain fields like engineering in which the readers expect to see certain types of language. And it is verbatim and it's not considered plagiarism. So they have to know that. American writing style is linear. It goes from A to B to C, topic sentence, support sentences, conclusion. And this is very difficult for some international students to grasp. And it's confusing for them, but I tell them that this is a tool in their toolbox. They are not forsaking their own style. They're just adding another way to do it, which will help them get through their programs in American institutions. And the other thing is taking a position versus hedging. Many students, international students from different cultures, have trouble asserting a specific position. They want to sit on the fence. This is good, but this is also good. In formulating a thesis, that's very difficult to sustain because you've got to take some kind of position in a lot of academic papers. And so this is another thing that we try to get them to talk about. And one last thing that I don't have here that I wanted to tell you, I have found that an editing technique for the students themselves is to have them read their own work out loud. They hate to do that. It's a violent resistance. They say, I don't have time to do that. I say, yes, you do, because you will hear your own errors and see what adjustments you need to make if you hear it, if you read it out loud, or have somebody read it to you if you've got somebody who's willing to do that. Okay, so I turn the presentation over to Bob and Brad. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nancy. So my name is Robert Watson. I'm a PhD student in the French department, working on my PhD in French literature. And I've been a consultant at the Writing Workshop at the English Language Center for about a year now. The program's been around for about that long. And as they said earlier, we consult typically with graduate students, but also sometimes with undergraduate students who are non-native writers. So English could be their second, third, fourth, sixth language, etc., but it's not their first language. And so we work with them not in a class structure, but in one-on-one format where they bring a writing assignment and we discuss issues that they may have with the assignment and how they can work through those. So I'll just talk about some of the experiences that I've had in my time as a consultant with a variety of different students. I've had students from Peabody before, students who are masters in engineering, students who are doing masters in Spanish, from all different parts of the university, and these are some of the kind of varieties of experiences that I've had. Maybe one of the first and major issues that's made me think, because I teach a class as well and give out writing assignments, is how do we as instructors and professors talk about what we want students to accomplish with a particular writing assignment, and how clear are we about the way in which students are supposed to approach the assignment itself? So, what is it exactly being asked in this particular case? And the difference, especially for students who are coming from a foreign language and don't necessarily understand all the valences of critical review, a critique, an analysis, a summary, all these different things. And so I had one student who came to me who had to do a critical review of two journal articles. And said to me, well, so should I just summarize the articles? Should I just say, repeat or distill the arguments from the articles? And I said, well, you should do that in a first and maybe second paragraph, but then you also need to move on to how do these articles fit together? How do they fit with the larger literature in the field? Where does your own position come into the picture? And then he said, well, so if I'm criticizing, that means I need to disagree with everything, right? And I said, no, that's not the... So we had some discussion about what is critique in this particular context. And also, it took a lot of looking at the prompt, both by myself and the student, to try to figure out what exactly it was that the professor wanted. So that's something to be aware of. Another one that I think that we maybe have all encountered at the ELC is that understanding that we have a very specific culturally determined perspective on what writing is, what good writing is, and what academic writing is. That all these different notions that we have are not only specific to English, but are also specific to the States and to academic institutions. And it's good to be aware of that because of the differences that the students may be bringing with them. And so I just put up an example there of maybe two different styles of writing. And I had, for instance, a student from Colombia who had been educated in a French high school in Colombia, and I asked them to write an opinion paper about their experiences with food in the United States and then with their own food and talking about cultural differences through the prism of food. And he wanted to write this very sort of French-style dissertation that was very dialectical. You know, here is, first you have a thesis, then you have an antithesis, and then you bring them together in some sort of a new synthesis. Versus the American style where, you know, you have a very clear, strong thesis that you're pushing very hard for through arguments, and then you come to a conclusion, and hopefully, if you've done your job, you've proved the case. So that's just another thing to be aware of, that oftentimes the way that we approach the very structuring of a paper can be somewhat different. And because of that, I put up here this term dialogical cultural translation in the sense that I'm maybe trying to find some terms that the student can understand when we're talking about critical review. How can that be explained? How can the student understand that? And then also, how does my understanding of what the assignment is changed by the way that the student brings his or her cultural differences to it? So I think it's a two-way process that's been very informative and enlightening for me. And then finally, dealing with frustrations. As I think Nancy mentioned earlier, these students oftentimes have at least a bachelor's, maybe a master's, and are perfectly qualified expert in their particular field. And so they're oftentimes going to be very frustrated at the fact that they're having to come to me at all. Just the very idea that they need to go see someone who might be younger than them or their age that's going to tell them, you know, about how to improve their writing. Oftentimes it's a sort of a strange situation for them. And as was also said earlier, the content that they may be able to deliver is not going to match their linguistic capacity. There's a constant gap between those two, as there is for me when I write in French. So I'm actually quite empathetic. I can empathize with them because I have the same problem in my own studies and in my own field. So what are some of the things that I try to help to do that when they're just coming to me with a big frustration? I try to say, instead of starting at a very complex level, let's break things down, make them simple, and then build from there. And so a couple of the tools that I've found that have been helpful, breaking down the paper to an outline level, just asking the person, you know, this is a really interesting 10-page, 15-page dissertation proposal. I'm not in your field. Could you explain it to me using an outline? Could you say A, B, C with some subpoints and really break it down for a non-specialist writer? Or could you tell me these 2.5 pages, I'm losing the thread of the narration, I'm losing the thread of your argument. Could you just break it down into 2 or 3 sentences orally and explain to me what it is that you're trying to get across? And then we kind of go back and can rework some of the sentences, maybe move some sentences that are actually topic sentences to the front of the paragraph, things like that. So those are some tools that I've found to be useful. And I think that's it, and I'll just pass it on to Brad, who has some more to say.
Hi everyone. My name is Brad Teague. I am a PhD candidate in the Department of Teaching and Learning, so up the hill here. I also work part-time at the English Language Center and most recently with the writing workshops. So I just wanted to talk very briefly and add a few ideas to what Rob and some of the other presenters have talked about. I think there are definite connections. I think we're starting to make some of the same points throughout the presentation. And I'll hopefully add a couple extra ideas to that. The first thing that I wanted to share with you are some of the ideas that I have taken from research, from theory, and from empirical studies, looking at the question, what are the features that tend to make writing workshops, and they're often called writing conferences, successful? And so this is something that I started doing when I first started working with the writing workshops, because of course I wanted to be as effective as possible in the workshops. Not that I can claim that they always proceed in the way that I'm going to recommend that they do. So also I wanted to mention that, at least in my case, most of my sessions have been focused more on language. It seems like in Rob's case, some of his sessions at least have focused on content, organization, perhaps some of the so-called higher order parts of writing. Mine tend to focus on grammar and vocabulary. So I think that's important to keep in mind. So with that said, here are some of the features that did come out of the literature as tending to make these workshops successful. So the first point is that ideally there will be a lot of interaction between the tutor and the learner. Okay, so there should be lots of talk, conversation, there shouldn't be silent sessions. Dialogic is the word I've used here. An exchange of ideas, right? I mean, ultimately, the paper is the student's, right? It's not our paper. So we have to hear what they are trying to express, listen to their ideas, and we want to help them but not take over too much. So this should be negotiated as well. The second point here, and this is one that's really important, the frequency and the quality of the help or the assistance that we offer learners during these sessions should change over time, especially if you're working with the same learners. As in my case, I've been working with a guy from South Korea who's a graduate student here at Peabody. I guess since we started the workshops, he's been coming almost on a weekly basis. So I've spent a lot of time with him. And I want to make sure that the help I give him changes over time. Otherwise, I continue to do all the work for him, and he's not really going to learn anything from those sessions. So two terms I used here. First of all, the help should be graduated, okay? And what that means is that it needs to go from more to less over time. So we need to learn to step back, right? Especially when we see that the student can do the work for himself or herself, okay? So a lot of this comes from sociocultural theory. That's my theory that I always use in my research. So the term scaffolding, right, is a related term. We want to work within their ZPDs, right? So you want to eventually back off. You may need to be more explicit during the initial sessions, but then you want to back off. Also, the help that you offer them should be contingent on the need. So again, just enough so that they can accomplish the task, but not so much that you're doing everything for them, right? And that it's too easy for them. So it's often hard to find out exactly what they need. So I think that's why negotiation is so important. You really don't know that until you're in there working with the student. So one thing I do, I guess a more practical strategy when I'm working with students, is I will have them to read, for example, one sentence, and I may see that there is a mistake or two in the sentence. And so I'll say, do you notice anything about that sentence? Do you notice any mistakes? Anything sound strange to you? And so they may say no. Okay, so I may need to get a little more explicit. Okay, so I may say, well, look at this phrase in particular. So I'm trying to focus their attention in on particular things until they can identify that mistake. And so they still may not see it. I'll say, well, could you add a word here? And they may get it, they may not. I'll say, and then if they haven't gotten it, then it's pretty clear that they don't know, you know, that concept or what's going on. And so I may say, well, you need an article and this is why. Okay, but I try to back off and then come in more and more and more until we negotiate the mistake, right? And research has shown that if you do it in that way over time, the learners will be able to eventually do that on their own, right? They'll require less help or less assistance over time. And so this comes to the last idea, which is that the learner should gradually assume greater responsibility for his or her performance. So the idea here is self-regulation, right? Again, from sociocultural theory. So the goal of these sessions should be to equip the student with the tools that will allow him or her to self-edit, right? I always joke with my students and say, I'm not going to be able to follow you around and always correct your mistakes, right? So we have to help you, you know, within our limited time, you know, to equip you with those tools that will allow you to do that. Otherwise, you know, I don't know that we're really accomplishing what we set out to do. Okay, so that said, I wanted to talk about a couple of the challenges, at least I have faced since working with a writing workshop. The first one is that there's often an expectation on the part of the learner that the tutor should do all the work, right? There is a policy which Lee talked about, and he showed you the website for that. And supposedly, learners, before they come to the writing workshop, have read that and understood that. But I've still seen that students expect me to basically just correct all the mistakes and give it back to them. I haven't had anyone drop it off and say that they'd come back and pick it up yet, but it's almost like that sometimes. So that's a challenge, right? Having to give that responsibility back to the learner a little bit. Also, at the same time, I think there's an urge on the part of us as teachers, as native English speakers, to just correct those mistakes. I know when I first started teaching ESL, I wasn't trained at all. I would just go through everybody's paper and correct all the mistakes because I thought that was the best way to teach, right? And I think that that's our urge, is just to fix it and get on with it. That's fast, right? That's a simple, fast solution. But if we're doing that, we're doing them a disservice, right? Because we're not allowing them to be involved in that process. So we got to restrain ourselves, right? And that's hard for me at times. Next point here, learners may not be used to the new role expected of them and may resist it. And again, this comes back to the first point. And I've even had a few students who are pretty visibly upset that I'm not correcting all their mistakes, right? And I think Nancy mentioned that a lot of students want that and expect that. And so I won't do that. And so I think they're almost, you know, they almost regret that they made the appointment with me, I think, sometimes. But I know, you know, in the back of my head that that's not the best way to proceed with it. The last point here, I think it's been the biggest issue for me, is there's a tension between helping the student to learn, which is my goal, but also at the same time, most of the papers that students bring to me are for a grade. And a lot of times, professors, I will see their comments, and it'll say, redo, or go to the writing studio, go to the ELC Writing Center, get the grammar fixed, and then turn it back in. And so the student's goal and the professor's goal at times is to just fix the grammar, whereas my goal is to help the student learn. So there's a tension there, right? And sometimes I really do, you know, just want to go through and correct all the mistakes because I know that if I do, the student's likely to get a higher grade. And so that's a tension that I really don't have an easy solution to, besides saying that perhaps we need to train some of our professors to work better with non-native speakers of English. So sometimes I'll have comments such as, I can't understand this, and so I'll read it and it's perfectly understandable. It's got maybe a few mistakes in there as far as grammar, but it's not like you can't understand it. So I think professors could be trained in some instances. The last thing here, some advice, I guess given all these problems and challenges. The first one is make sure that learners, if you're doing these types of writing workshops, make sure that they understand the role they're expected to assume throughout the session. So usually during the first session, I have to basically just be very explicit as far as what I expect and how I will run the session. Okay? They're not always going to like that, okay? But that's just how we do it. Okay? And so some training needs to go on, I think, for the student to know how it's going to happen. Second point, as far as the actual session, we're actually doing some of the work. One thing I will do is read through the writing along with the learner. Maybe the learner will read some, I'll read some, they'll listen, they'll read. And I try to provide feedback in the ways suggested in the first slide. Okay? It doesn't always happen so nicely, okay? But that's my goal. Okay? Again, take a more distant approach and then try to gradually hone in on the mistakes. That takes a long time to do that. And sometimes it's like they're just wanting to get through that and get through the whole paper and they're looking through, oh, I have 5 more pages, hurry up, right? And so, you know, there are some tensions, but that's how at least I like to do it. The third point here, it's best we know to attend to only one or two mistakes or types of mistakes at a time, right? The brain has a limited capacity for processing, right? And especially with second language. And so if we go through and correct all the mistakes, as Nancy was saying, that's going to be overwhelming and not much learning is going to occur, probably. Okay? Whereas if we focus on one or two things, maybe prepositions, maybe articles, but not both, then the learner's attention is going to be focused on those things. And we know that that's how learning occurs, so we focus that. Again, there's a tension because the learners want everything corrected, the professors might want everything corrected, so, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. Next, again, I think we have to remember that the student is ultimately the author of the paper. So we don't want to mandate our opinions. And I've especially come across this with vocabulary, whereas I see that I'm changing a lot of the words. And so the paper, in a lot of ways, becomes my voice as opposed to the student's. And so that's, again, why I try to restrain myself and say, you know, your word works. It makes sense. It might not be the one that I would choose, but it still works, right? So I don't need to change every little thing about it, right? Otherwise, I think it's just, it becomes more my writing than their writing. The last thing here, of course, we can't expect perfection, right? As Lee and others have mentioned, second language learning is a really hard thing. It takes a really long time, and most people never get it perfectly, right? And so we can't expect perfection, but I think we can expect to see improvement over time, especially if we're, you know, being informed about how we work with non-native speakers of English. And so that is my part. And thanks for the pictures.
Okay, thank you. We have a few minutes left if there are any questions.
There are actually a couple of things on my mind, but maybe I'll just close one and then save the rest for over eating drawings or something. But one of the things I'm wondering about is the specific kinds of strategies you use to deflate the expectation that the tutor will do all the work.
Deflating strategies.
Well, sometimes I just come out and say, you know, I know that this works, you're just going to have to trust me, right? And so, you know, I want you to take responsibility. And sometimes I come back to this thing where I can't follow you around all the time, and I mean, that's a joke, and so we all laugh about that. But yeah. I'm being kind of serious about it. And so I tell them, you know, we're only here for 50 minutes a week, and so you can't accomplish everything. And so I'm trying to help you to be able to do it by yourself on your own.
One thing that I found is really useful from the very beginning is to always give synonyms when you're talking about a noun, or give different phrasal verbs or verbal expressions, so that it's really interesting. I found that they'll ask me, they'll say, oh, can you write that down? I just want to see how it looks. So I'll write it down, and then I'll put a slash, and then I'll write another one next to it, and then I'll put a slash, and I'll write another one, and I'll say, well, depends which one. And they say, no, well, which one am I supposed to use? And I said, well, it depends upon what you'd like to say. This has the nuance here. This has more of this nuance. This has more of this nuance. And I said, also, I don't know field-specific terms. There might be one of these words that's best in your field. So that's something that you can think about. But that, I think, if you do that from the very beginning, that sets a good tone. Because then there's no one right answer. There's multiple possibilities for... Or I'll say, oh, you could put this sentence this way, or you could move this, add a comma here, and... Oftentimes, that's something that there's a lot of resistance to, but I find that that's a lot better, because then I feel like I'm offering them choices without making the choice for them. So.
Yeah, and I often tell them, you know, there are several options, and you can choose one of many, right? There's no one correct answer, so I do that as well.
But it's interesting how that can be a source of anger. It's like, no, well, which is the best one? And I said, well, you know, it's your paper. You need to make that choice, you know.
Yeah, that happens with the guy I'm working with from South Korea. He's always like, Brad, you're the native speaker. It's like almost like you're God. You choose.
That's right. Well, I think just with the nature of the interaction, you're challenging the authorial role anyway. I mean, if you want to or not or don't intend to. But I don't think that the student always understands that they have to assume the authorial role. You know, 100%. So it's a tricky thing.
They can oftentimes be really demeaning about their own prose. They'll say, oh, you just... erase it, just scratch it out.
Yeah.
And I said, well, no, you worked really hard to put this together. You know, that's why I'm trying to offer you these choices, because I want, if you'd like to retain that particular structure or that particular word that you have a particular attachment to, then that should be the case. So I try to counter that tendency to sort of say, oh, I'm no good in English, I can't write well, et cetera. So try to balance that a little bit. I think that helps too.
My students do a lot of rewriting, and I do a lot of correcting at the beginning, but then it gets narrower because if they are actually paying attention to what they're writing and they want to improve, sometimes it's a question of time. If they've only got 3 more weeks to put this thesis together, we have to do a lot of editing together, but I spend a lot of one-on-one time with them, and I try to go from more to less, and I find that it helps them to rewrite and rewrite and rewrite when there's time to do that.
That's great in the workshop too, to say, you know, okay, well, this sentence, I'm not really sure what you're, do you think you could, so first I'll say, can you tell me what you mean? Orally, it works fine. I said, okay, let's try to write that down, you know, and then at the end of it, oh, wow, that's what I wanted to say in the first place, but I, for whatever reason, was hung up on something, so that can help too. But it's the time issue I find in the writing workshops can be, and I'm sure in the writing studio too, there's such a limit on time, and especially if they're coming to you with a lot of pages.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I've had people come in with like 10 pages.
It's really hard to...
You do have people like 50.
You pick your battles, you know, you do pick...
And so I tell them, I said, you know, we're not going to get to all this, you know. So which one do you want to do? Which page should be?
Prioritize.
Yeah. Triage.
Okay. Other questions? Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank
you. We appreciate it. Please let us know if we can be of assistance by just contacting us through our website or email or phone or drop by. Thank you.